Support for Jim Pease's Talk of Iowa Wildlife Call-In Program comes from the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Details on how you can protect wildlife habitat are at inhf.org. Bionic Bunny, Brer Rabbit, Vinicula, Hazel, Uncle Wiggily, Buster Baxter, Babbity Rabbity, and Thumper are fictional rabbits. The real ones are in your backyard and garden, nibbling on your hostas, the bark of trees, other green plants you'd prefer they stay away from. It's Wildlife Day on Talk of Iowa with Jim Pease. It's an all-rabbit and hare hour. We'll hear about Iowa's native rabbits and hares, their behaviors, their hardy and varied appetites. They're an important part of Iowa's wild food chain. We'll discuss that role. And Jim will have advice on how to protect your garden and plants from the cute but sometimes annoying critters. At least they don't vocalize, but we've heard that they can sometimes scream. And remember, they're not rodents, they're lagomorphs. It's All Rabbits All the Time on Wildlife Day on Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa, following news from Iowa Public Radio and NPR. This is Talk of Iowa for this Tuesday on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese, and it's Wildlife Day with Jim Pease, who's in our Ames studio, and it's going to be an all rabbit and hare day. Good morning, Jim.
Did I hear you right?
Sorry, oh, no. Guys. Oh, no. Here we go. I was expecting this.
And why is that? I don't know. Why would you expect that from me? I was thinking about doing this show, and so I put a bunch of things into a hat, and I reached in and pulled out a rabbit, you know. So I thought, oh, we better do a show on rabbits, of course.
Well, that is fine. But, you know, people love to talk about rabbits. They're interesting little critters.
They are.
Says here, my favorite source, Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
Rabbits were introduced into Britain by the Normans, and they were kept in large enclosed warrens for their fur and meat. They have gnawing teeth, and so it used to be classified as rodents.
Yeah.
But rabbits and hares have been reclassified into a group of their own, Lagomorpha.
Lagomorpha, right?
Lagomorpha.
Yeah. And the reason is that they have totally different digestive systems, different breeding systems than rodents at all. I mean, some people still consider them rodents because they have those two, actually four, but they look like two top incisors and two bottom incisors. And but you mentioned a word that is really important. It's one of the reasons I wanted to do this program. With the recent release of Alice in Wonderland, a re-release of Alice in Wonderland, and falling down the rabbit hole and everything, I just didn't want people to think that the kinds of rabbits that are in England that you mentioned, that live in warrens where they have these huge, essentially colonies of rabbits, we don't have those in Iowa. Our rabbits don't dig those warrens. They don't. They will occasionally use the burrow of another rabbit or of another critter that has dug it—a woodchuck hole or a foxhole, something like that. But they won't. They don't dig warrens, and they're pretty solitary as compared to the European rabbits. It's a totally different genus over there. It's a Rictolagus, whereas the ones we have here are. One of two different species, and we can talk a little bit about that.
Well, so much for my British information. I'll just toss that aside here. I had no idea.
Yeah,
that things were so different.
Yeah, well, you know, I a number of years ago, they were when public radio was still doing the live on the air reading of books. They were reading Watership Down, and mm-hmm. Another British book about European hares, and I had to go on the air at that time because a lot of people were calling saying, "Oh, I've got this warren of rabbits in my yard." And I said, "Well, not very likely unless you live in England." You know?
Yeah.
So, well, the two species of rabbit we have here, one is really a rabbit, and those are the cottontail rabbits that mm-hmm. common everybody sees, and the second one is actually a hare. The jackrabbit, white-tailed jackrabbit, and the difference is actually pretty significant. The young cottontails are born in a shallow nest, often hollowed out in the lawn. I think most people would see them in the lawn. They're covered, they're sort of filled with fur that is sort of pulled out of the belly of the female, covers the little ones, and a little bit of grass on top. The young are naked, they're blind, and they're helpless at birth. They stay in there for 12 to 14 days, a couple of weeks, and then come out. And they're not weaned until they're 4 to 5 weeks old. Hares, on the other hand, and this would include things like the jackrabbit, or people in the northern regions of the country may be familiar with the snowshoe hare. They are born in a shallow, what's called a form. It's not much more than just a depression, a slight depression in the ground. They're fully furred. They have their eyes and ears open, and they're running around within a few minutes after their birth. They're precocious in that way. So there's a big difference between hares and rabbits as we know them.
Yeah, it says here hares are generally born with hair.
Right.
I thought that was sort of redundant. But,
yeah, different spelling. You know?
And speaking of jackrabbits, another article, this one from a reliable source called Prairie State Outdoors, mm-hmm. says the white-tailed jackrabbit is Iowa's only native species of wild hare.
That's true.
And
that's
they're
true.
Becoming very unusual now. Is that right?
Yeah. One of the things that's happened, and there's been a recent study done here by a professor and graduate student here at Iowa State University with a small population on one of the university farms outside of town here. And what they're finding is if you look at the change in agriculture, the jackrabbit is really an animal of open country. And when we had farms that were real mixed farms with lots of grassland, pasture, some row crop, but really a nice mix. Then we had lots of jackrabbits around, and now that farming has changed to much larger fields. First of all, few fence rows, few places for them to hide. Really, a lot more just straight row crop agriculture, corn and beans. There's much less pasture available, many fewer grasslands available, and that mix of farming with some pasture, some row crop, that small grains, that sort of thing, where they did so well, really isn't very common in Iowa anymore. And as a result, that habitat change has really caused a change in their numbers. And there's real concern that they may disappear from the state if we continue along the same lines over the next 10, 20 years that we have in the last 10 or 20 years.
Talk of Iowa with Jim Pease. We'll take your rabbit and hare questions this hour. We're live this hour, 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This article says when it comes to coping with the elements, they just don't come any tougher than this, referring to the jackrabbits. Says they will just, the cold weather doesn't even seem to bother them too much. They'll be standing outside just looking around.
Well, I would suspect that many of our listeners have probably never seen a jackrabbit or not known that they've seen it because, that, as I say, they're really a critter of open country and a short grassland kind of thing. And if you've ever tried to chase one down, it is a huge difference between cottontails. You know, they can take a leap of about a meter or so and a couple of those, but then they try and avoid predation by being eaten by zigzagging back and forth, and they can't go great distances. Hares, jackrabbits, on the other hand, they can leap much farther than that, and they actually will kind of spring up in the air. Their legs and muscles are made for both speed and distance. And I've had seen dogs chasing them, and they're just playing with a dog. It's amazing. They can exceed speeds of 20, 25 miles an hour without any problem at all. So they're pretty impressive little guys, and they can go for a long distance, much longer than the cottontails can. Mm.
Hate to go back to this British article, but okay. just wanted to ask you about this. The males are called bucks.
Uh-huh.
I remember this from Watership Down, of course.
Yeah, that's right.
When I read this, when I read the book about 40 years ago. the females, wonderful book it is, too.
Yeah.
The females are called does.
Does.
Okay, this is what really bothers me. Now, it says here the babies are called kits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why aren't they called bunnies?
Yeah.
Why has this disturbed me so much?
They are called bunnies by, you know, it's like other things. There are this sort of scientific nomenclature, and then there's the rabbit breeders nomenclature, and the then there's a common nomenclature. So it's that sort of thing. Bunnies can, as you well know, can refer to other things in our society as well. So that's the other reason, I think.
I see what you mean. And actually, I hate to bring this up. At the end of the where did that go? At the end of the Wikipedia article, it says, oh, yeah, here it is. It says, for further information, see Playboy Bunnies.
I see.
No. Where did that come from?
I don't know. That's the trouble with Wikipedia.
Yeah, I know.
It's one of those sources.
One of the many problems.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Cedar Rapids. Good morning, Jim.
Hi. My question was more oriented towards, I guess, wild rabbits. I was originally from northern Minnesota as a kid, and I remember you could go in the woods and just see just rabbits everywhere. And if you go hunting them, you could literally get 20, 30 rabbits in a half hour. And I was always told a certain disease comes through every so often and kills them off, or varmints, or you don't see rabbits like you used to. And I was kind of wondering why.
Well, it's a real interesting question, because it refers to a couple of different things. One is, in northern Minnesota, probably, while you may have had some cottontails there, is more likely to see snowshoe hares. And snowshoe hares are a boreal forest animal. In fact, they're most famous for the 10-year cycle of snowshoe hares. And they will go from densities of, and I happen to study these for my master's degree, so I know a fair bit about them. They will go from densities of 10 hares per square mile down to one hare per 10 square miles in a matter of a couple of years. So the changes in densities are a couple of orders of magnitude. I mean, it's really incredible. You will see, talked about, Jim, there will be rabbits everywhere, and then a couple of years later, there'll be nothing. Well, it turns out that 10-year cycle is not caused by disease so much as it is by two things. One is the hares outbreed, and it's always interesting, I think, to know that under natural conditions this can happen to a species. They outbreed the available food supply, and in winters like we've just had, and are still having to some extent, these are the years that they literally starve to death. And then once their numbers are depressed, the predators, which only have one litter a year, takes them a while to catch up. The predators further depress those populations, and then the predator populations fall off. They can't find enough food, and so then the hares begin to recover. And it takes about from peak to peak, from abundance to abundance, takes about, on average, about 10 years. And this has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years, probably thousands of years, but hundreds of years that we know of. So it's a pretty interesting cycle.
All right, well, we have to take a break. Jim, if you want to hold on, we will get back to you in a minute after our little bit of music here from Bugs Bunny as our Rabbit Hour continues. Talk of Iowa, Jim Pease, back in a minute. Back to Talk of Iowa. It's Wildlife Day on the program with Jim Pease, and I think we did manage, Jim, to answer... is it Bill?
Jim's
question, yeah, because he's already left. So let's move on to Gene, who's calling from Osage, and Gene called 866-780-9100. Hello, Gene.
Good morning.
Morning. Good morning. Go ahead with your question.
Well, this isn't a question. Maybe I'll end up with a question, but my mother was working in the garden one time, probably 35 years ago, and she came upon a hole filled with rabbits, she didn't count them, but she went to get a little pail, a little 10-quart pail, and it was pretty nearly filled with little baby rabbits. Mm-hmm. And she thought that maybe several rabbits had left their bunnies there. They were too little to hop away. Mm-hmm. And can you comment on that?
Sure. Yeah, that's an interesting finding. That will happen occasionally. What cottontails do, as you're well aware, they will dig. It's a hole maybe 3 inches or so across, and it might be 6 to 8 inches deep. And she'll have her young then in that hole. And it's oftentimes, it seems like, in towns and cities, it'll be in a yard or other short grass area. It's not under, it's often right out in the middle of the lawn. You wouldn't think it'd be a great place. Sure, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. You've found an interesting observation because it appears, and this will happen, I would say rarely, but more than one female will use the same hole or enlarge it and put her young in there as well. Usually the hole is no more than, as I say, about 3 inches across or so and 6 to 8 inches deep. But, sometimes you kind of wonder if there's a relationship between those two rabbits. Maybe it was a young of the female from the year before. It's pretty unlikely, but it's certainly possible. But they pull out the hair out of their belly then,
yeah,
and will line that hole and keep those young warm and actually pretty well insulated from the from both the ground and the rain. Surrounded by that hair.
Well, I thought that my mother wasn't one to make up big stories.
Right, right.
It was just about unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they'll have from, on average, most of those litters in Iowa are probably 4 to 6 on average young per litter. But they could be up to 12, as many as 15 in a litter.
Right.
So, it's certainly possible. What happens is that it depends on the condition of the female when she's bred. If she's in very good condition, has a large egg supply, they actually ovulate upon copulation. They're spontaneous ovulators. So if she's in really good condition, has a lot of eggs available, they'll have a lot of young. But if she's not in such good condition, generally they have smaller litters, as few as one, but usually 4 to 6, and as I say, up to 15. So this was obviously a pretty healthy female or set of females that were having litters.
Now, I haven't seen many rabbits for quite a while around here, and usually, usually I see rabbit tracks after every snow.
Yeah,
but this has probably been a hard winter for them.
This has been a very tough winter. It's one of the other things that caused me to want to talk about this. Is if you look out the window right now, particularly as the snow is receding a little bit, the amount of damage to woody plants on my property and on campus and everywhere else I've gone in the state is really pretty amazing. Rabbits are eating, have eaten shrubs. Usually, if you look at your index finger, anything much larger than your index finger is really too big for a rabbit. And there are a lot of shrubs that are the size of your forearm that are have been debarked. That's starvation behavior. And happens occasionally in nature. We get severe damage in winters like this because they run out of things to eat and they want to fill their belly with something. They're really not getting... They're almost zero nutrition out of eating that bark, but they are filling their bellies with it. So there's been a tremendous amount of damage this year, and I think you're probably right. Those that survive will be either really lucky or really tough, and so it may be a low this year for rabbits.
Well, okay, Gene, appreciate that
much.
Call from Osage, 866-780-9100. Here's an email. Jim from Jeff in Rock Island, Illinois. Hello, I love the jokes of the hour today. They're great. Now, he's probably the only person.
I don't know what jokes he's talking about.
I'm glad somebody appreciates it.
Okay.
I was wondering what kind of plant or vegetable I could grow in a small patch in my yard. Well, here we go. Sorry, I lost the screen there.
It's okay.
That I could grow in my yard to keep the rabbits away from the rest of my garden. Also, my cat loves watching the birds feed on the bird feeder next to the window. I think he would like bunnies too. He's an indoor cat, so he won't be catching the rabbits.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things here. The question about what to grow, that if you look around this year, right now, you're seeing species of plants that are really low in digestibility. They can't get many nutrients out of them, and they're still being damaged. Plants, woody plants, vary a lot in digestibility, in their usability by a rabbit or by deer as well. Anything that eats the woody stems in the wintertime. And some plants are highly digestible, things like trembling aspen, willows, things like that are very digestible. Things like viburnums, some of the dogwoods, sumac, those are really low in digestibility, hardly any nutrition in them at all, and yet we're seeing damage on even those poorly digestible species this winter. So plants have evolved ways over many, many millennia of trying to retard, keep animals from browsing them. And yet still in severe winters, they get browsed. So we have not yet come up with anything that is guaranteed. It's one of the reasons I sort of shy away from putting out a list of plants, and you'll see these on the internet, you'll see these in garden catalogs, and they say, well, these are guaranteed not to be eaten by rabbits. That list is extremely short. And so I really, because in tough years, there are certainly things that they don't prefer, but in tough years like this one we're in right now, they'll eat it anyway. And this year is an object lesson. So the short answer is there's really nothing that you can plant that will keep rabbits away. There are certainly things that they prefer over other things, but nothing that you can plant that is guaranteed to keep them away. We'll talk a little bit more about exclusion, but that's really the solution is fencing to keep them from the plants that you want to get to yourself, keep to yourself.
All right, Jeff in Rock Island, there's your answer. Let's go to Clive next, and Jonathan is calling in. Hello, Jonathan.
Good morning. I just wanted to know if Jim knows the story about elephant stew.
No. Why don't you tell me about elephant stew?
As a lover of bad puns, if you're serving a large group of people, it's good to make elephant stew. If, however, you discover when you're making it that you really don't have enough stew, you can always add rabbit because the flavor's the same. But you have to be very careful not to add too much because some people don't like hair in their stew.
Hair in their stew. Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it. Yeah. Well, you know, when I was talking about the breeding differences, it's one of the things I considered naming this program From Hair to Maternity. You know?
Other than that, I would love to see you do a program one day on the Canadian geese and what the situation is with them continuing.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Jonathan, thank you. I hope Jeff was listening for that. Start Jeff in Rock Island.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure he was.
Let's see if we can get a quick question in before the break from Kenny in Cedar Falls. Hello, Kenny. Do you have a quick question?
Yeah. I was just wondering if there was any truth to the old wives' tale about if you do find a litter of little rabbits in a hole, whether or not you should move them or touch them based on if the mother smells your scent on them, whether or not she'll still take care of them or not.
Yeah, short
answer.
And
I'll go ahead and take my answer off the air.
Great, thanks, yeah. That's a great question. The short answer is, and I'll talk a little bit more about it after the break, is that no, there's very little truth to that. They do have a good sense of smell, but they're very accustomed to human smells. And if you pick up the hair or take the grass off the top and look at them, she'll still come back and feed them once or twice a day. So not to worry about that.
That's good to know. That's funny. I was just going to ask you that. As I picked up a little bunny in the garage last summer,
sure.
He was lost, and I took him back to the little hole in the ground where they were living, and I was worried about that.
Yeah, shouldn't be a problem. In fact, if he was already in your garage, I think he was looking for something in the garage. Maybe he may not have been lost.
We'll be back in 5 minutes. Talk of Iowa continues. 10:36. It's Wildlife Day with Dr. Jim Pease, emeritus professor at Iowa State, and we're talking about rabbits and hares this hour. Always an interesting topic. And Jim, you were talking about picking up a kit,
yeah,
and you're saying really we shouldn't worry too much about it. That's good.
It's really overblown. I think it was the way our mothers had of keeping us from
playing
with things in the yard. You put out this great story. I mean, they're really pretty. Motherhood is a very strong instinct in most critters, and they don't allow a little thing like a bit of human smell to keep them from taking care of their young. But they do have a different kind of motherhood than humans do. That nest in your yard, lots and lots of people every year, they find one and they say, oh, they've been abandoned, because they look around and they don't see a rabbit around. And they say, oh, they've been abandoned. And so then they try and take care of it. And, of course, most of the young or all the young die because they can't care for them the way the female does. What happens is that once those cottontail rabbits are in that little nest, she comes about once a day for 1 to 2 minutes. That's it. And in that 1 to 2 minutes, they will nurse on her. She's a mammal, so she gives off milk, and that's enough for them for that day. They, as I say, they emerge from that nest 12 to 14 days after being born, and then they're out and around, and she will wean them entirely about 4 weeks or four to five weeks, somewhere in that range. And so they're not abandoned at all. It's just sort of a different view of motherhood. At the same time, if that nest were to get raided by a fox or a dog or a coyote or something, and one of them happens to survive, she's still going to probably come back and take care of that young. Because the motherhood instinct is very, very strong. But it's a different kind of instinct than humans have. So we need to remember that when we find that first nest of rabbits this spring. And they probably won't just be this spring, because they'll have 3, 4, or even 5 litters in a summer. So you can see how rabbits, the whole saying, breeding like rabbits, means there's a lot of them. And in fact, that it's because they're eaten by lots of things. They serve that incredibly valuable point in the food chain where they are food for lots of other things.
Now that we have lots more hawks around, too,
right,
I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Always dangers everywhere.
You bet.
Here's an email from Kate from Cedar Falls. She says, well, rabbits dine on open compost piles with kitchen scraps.
If they have access to the compost pile and the scraps are something that they can eat, certainly they will dine on that. Everything from carrot scrapings and potatoes peelings. I don't think they would dine on things, though, like banana peels or orange rinds, because those are not something that they would encounter normally in their environment, so those sorts of things they wouldn't. But other common household usual to encounter household scraps, they probably would.
And here we go, Jim. You can decide whether you want to answer this. Kate says, if I could ask a non-rabbit question,
sure.
Should we allow one this hour?
Sure.
Is it normal for a raccoon to nest in a basement window well?
Normal. What is normal in raccoons? raccoons are extremely adaptable. They will... they take up residence in all kinds of places, including in cities. Storm sewers are very common, underneath garden sheds, certainly in holes in trees, but all kinds of places. They'll dig through the roof to get into an attic. It wouldn't surprise me at all to use a window well. However, there may be a problem there. If it's a very deep window well with extremely steep sides, they may have fallen in there in search of something and be unable to get out. So she needs to do two things. One is provide a board, if that's the case, if this is a 4 or 5 foot deep well and very steep sides, provide a board. Just put a sort of a rough sawn board down there, a 2x4, at an angle, and the raccoon will be able to get out of there or anything else that falls in there. And then once that's taken care of, I would cover that window well with a good tight-fitting cover that will prevent that problem from occurring again.
Let's go back to rabbits. Here is Kevin calling from Holt, Missouri. Hello, Kevin.
Hello. My wife had me build a rabbit cage at one time, with like 12 cages in it, and she kept notes and books and kept track of who did who and when they were due.
Uh-huh.
And we raised them for meat.
Sure.
And Well, I read in a book one time about somebody that built a pit. It was like 20 by 20. They lined it with either chicken wire or chain link, put a roof structure over it, whether it's out of barn metal or tarp, about 3 or 4 foot above the ground, and dug this pit deep enough to where you could just basically lay bales of straw in there, and then just threw a couple of rabbits in there and let them have at it, and didn't matter who did who and when they were due or whatever. And I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I've raised rabbits myself for meat and fur, and in the past when we lived on our farm in Wisconsin, and I did the same thing your wife did in terms of cages and keeping track. Rabbits being pretty adaptable critters, they could probably breed in a pit like that. There'd be several problems I can see right off. Feeding them nutritious food in amounts that are good enough, keeping the area clean enough so that you wouldn't have a high degree of disease or death in the young, wouldn't be my favorite way to do it. Among other things, predation would be no small problem. If a skunk or a weasel or a mink got in there, I could make short work of them very quickly. So it wouldn't be my favorite way to raise them, that's for sure.
I see. Okay. I was just wondering if you thought, you know, how you're not supposed to allow, same way with dogs and cats, you know, if they're really close relatives, it's probably not good to
let
them.
You're thinking of the genetics inbreeding problem. It takes a number of generations for inbreeding problems, quite honestly, to show up very often. I wouldn't worry about that for, a couple, 3 years in that sort of situation. But you might occasionally get some things like that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for the call, Kevin. We appreciate it. Let's go next to Jeff in Cedar Falls. And, Jeff, you're on Talk of Iowa Wildlife Day.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My aunt used to go rabbit hunting with my grandfather with ferrets, and she was describing this to me one time and said if the liver was ever off color, you had to get rid of that rabbit because that could kill you.
Hmm.
Does that make any sense? Could you
get
to that disease?
Yeah, there's a common disease in rabbits called tularemia. And tularemia is most easily seen as a diseased liver. Just the off colorness is not the problem so much as it is, as I recall, spots on the liver. It usually, if it's going to kill the animal, they're usually dead by first frost. So it's why a lot of people don't hunt rabbit until after the first frost in the fall, because the tularemia problem is usually non-existent by that time. But people do watch for it still, although it's not very common at all. It does occur occasionally. And hunting with ferrets is quite an interesting thing. I wonder how they would get the rabbit away from the ferret, once the ferret caught the rabbit. That would be kind of interesting.
Well, if I had been there, might be able to tell more, but that sounded interesting, too, so that's why we got the story.
That's great. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you
bet.
Jeff. 866-780-9100. Let's go next to Dan. Dan, where are you calling from?
From Davenport.
Okay. You're on the air.
Thank you. You guys are fantastic to listen to.
Thank you.
I've got more rabbits now than I've usually had in the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't catch earlier when you were talking about, you say they eat most anything when forced to. Was arborvitus one of those?
Yeah, they'll certainly eat. In fact, I've had some real damage to arborvitae this winter, both from rabbits and deer. They will eat that certainly this year. You're giving me an opportunity to talk a little bit about this. So let's find out what bugs bunnies, if you catch the drift there.
There's another one.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
And one of the things that gardeners can do, homeowners can do, now is to use a little bit of repellent. Repellents are usually either taste or smell repellents, and because these are mammals, that's the main way mammals communicate with one another, is by their sense of taste or a sense of smell. But you have to use them strategically. There are a wide variety of things. If you go to any garden store, there are a wide variety of things on the market. But you need to look at the active ingredients and decide what is it that makes it, a repellent. Some of them have what's called capsaicin in them. Capsaicin is the stuff that makes hot peppers hot. And basically what they've done is they've taken really hot peppers, either extracted the chemical from them or simply dried and ground up the peppers and included in the repellent, and you put it on the plants, and they may try one, but they get hot enough that they don't like it.
Come on, I put that on my lunch each day, okay? You know.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah, yeah.
And some rabbits probably like it. There are smell repellents that are often made, if you look at them, they say egg solids. That means it smells like rotten eggs. It's hydrogen sulfide. Both of these things have some basis in nature where sulfur is a good repellent. But like everything, repellents have limited impact. If the critter is hungry enough, they're going to eat it anyway. Or if you use it too often, they get accustomed to the smell or to the taste, and they simply ignore it, and they'll eat it anyway.
Oh.
So you have to use those repellents strategically. Really, the best way of keeping them away from the plants that you want is through excluding them, putting fencing around them that is small enough to exclude the small rabbits and large enough to still allow airflow, that sort of thing. For example, when I plant trees on my place or shrubs, I surround them with a wire mesh, usually 1-inch mesh chicken wire. That's small enough that the little rabbits can't get through there once they're out running around. And I put it up high enough where most winters the rabbits can't get over it. Now, what I found this winter is, of course, the snow was deep enough. The snow was deeper than that, and they did a lot of damage anyway. So I've gone back out to some of my high-value trees and put 5-foot fence around them on top of the snow just to keep them away. So really, exclusion is the solution to losing those trees and shrubs on your property. Now it's not too late. Unless you looking at your shrubs and saying they're totally girdled, they're not going to come back anyway, they've got some damage, go ahead and put a fence around them right now, and that'll prevent further damage, because we still have probably a good month before there are sufficient herbaceous plants out there that they will eat switch to. So there still could be a lot of damage over the next month.
Yeah, the damage on these is like about halfway up. I don't know if it's from last winter and this winter, but hopefully they will come back.
Yeah, it's really tough to know with arborvitae. A lot of the evergreens don't do very well. Once they've been girdled, they're virtually dead. So you may have to go ahead and surround them with a little fence now. A lot of this available at garden stores or hardware stores, you can usually get 2-foot high or 2.5-foot high, 30-inch high, 1-inch mesh chicken wire or hardware cloth. And go ahead and surround them, and that'll protect them for the next month. And you can use it then next year to surround whatever plants are left as well.
Okay, Dan, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. He called from Davenport. A no rabbits allowed sign is not going to do the trick.
Yeah, you have to put in rabbit language. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and it's hard to speak rabbit, but I can do it.
I know, and I was going to ask you, they don't make any noises, but you say they scream.
They do scream.
Why do they scream?
Well, you may hear this sometimes. If you're out in the woods enough, you will occasionally hear a rabbit scream, and that's usually a sign that they're being preyed upon. Mm. The young are being grabbed by something, and before they're dead, they will scream, or the adults, and they sound a little bit like this. I hope the mics will take this. It goes, wee, 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 wee. And it's pretty amazing to hear a rabbit screaming.
I never heard it, yeah.
Yeah, it's it will kind of make the hair stand up in the back of your head if you've never heard it before. So.
Oh, no. You are so multi-talented.
He screams like I've tried it in singles bars, and it just doesn't work.
Let's go to John in Mason City. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I have seen what appears to be a cross between cottontails and lop ears in my yard. I saw them last summer, and I was wondering if they were going to survive the winter, which was that lop ear cross.
Well, I doubt that there is a cross because they're totally different genera, actually, and so the genus is entirely different. So, but what you may have, you may have is a cottontail whose ears, you know, there are all kinds of genetics experiments going on in nature all the time, and you may just have a cottontail that doesn't have the musculature in its ears, and it may or may not survive. You know, the ears in rabbits are really, really important because they're the way that they control their temperature regulators. They stick their ears up in the summertime and pump blood through them, and it works like the radiator on a car. The wind blows through them. They don't sweat, and so the only way they can cool off is by putting those ears up and allowing the wind to cool off the blood before it goes back down into the body. So it's this radiator effect. In the wintertime, they try and keep their ears down so that they don't lose heat from blood going to their ears.
Do you suppose I have maybe two lop ears loose? Because what I had was spotted rabbits and black with white on them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Ears hanging down.
Yeah, that's exactly what you have. You've got the domestic, somebody's release or released or accidentally gotten away domestic rabbits. Those are probably checkered giants and some lop ears in the area. So it's quite possible.
Well, on a side note, I got a whole bunch of robins up here in Mason City today.
Hey, I saw my first robin the other day over the weekend, and boy, it's good to see them, isn't it?
Oh, man.
It gives you hope that spring is sometime coming.
That's a fact.
That's great.
Right. Thanks a lot. I haven't seen a robin yet. Still looking around. Here's an interesting email from Lyle in Des Moines. He says, we used to have some Netherland dwarf bunnies as pets, kept them in a big cage in my computer room. On your wildlife show years ago, you mentioned a website where you could listen to bird calls. I went to the website and clicked on an owl call. The bunnies went crazy and raced around the cage and hid in the straw at the bottom of the cage and made themselves invisible. These bunnies had never been outdoors, and I would have thought generations of domestic breeding would have left this instinct behind. I was amazed that they would react to an owl screech through some tinny old computer speakers.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
You have to do more experiments, so it may not be a reaction to potential predators, much to a weird noise. You know, try them on the Mothers of Invention or, Meatloaf or something like that. Maybe they'd react the same way, you know? So.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but interesting story, yeah. So.
Let's see. I want to go next to Jeremy, who's calling from Iowa City. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi. I think I have an opposite question from some of the earlier callers. I'm a landowner, have several acres of mixed fields and timber, and I actually wonder what kind of things I can do to encourage rabbit habitat. I've made several brush piles and things like that, but I just like to encourage more rabbits. I'm a hunter, but I also love the birds of prey and just, give them a little bit more activity around here. So any ideas for me?
Yeah, that's a great question because a lot of people do want to increase rabbit habitat. And rabbits like the cottontail rabbits we have one of the widest habitat preferences of any of the rabbits around the world. They will live anything from grasslands to woodlands, and but their preferred habitat would be something like you described, sort of open areas with some brush in and on the edges. They're an edge-loving species.
Mm-hmm.
And putting out things like brush piles, a thing as simple as brush piles, one of the best ways to encourage it. I would also say the more you can mix, the more different kinds of plants, particularly mm-hmm. forbs, that's the flowering plants that you can put into your prairie area or your woodland edge,
sure.
The better off you'll be. You'll also need to provide them some food during the winter. So planting things that are preferred, things like hazel, chokecherry, small aspens, that sort of thing. They love willow. They love that sort of thing in the wintertime. So you've got to think year round.
Okay.
Brush piles are good. but certainly planting both summer and winter food will really encourage them.
Great. Okay. Thanks so much.
You bet.
All right, Jeremy. Jeremy called from Iowa City. Let's go next to Kim in Emmitsburg. Good morning, Kim.
Hi. How do you do? I first want to say, unfortunately, I have heard a bunny scream.
You have heard a bunny scream, yeah.
More than once, yeah.
It's impressive, isn't it? It's amazing.
Well, my cat, who is notorious for preying on small, helpless animals, would actually sit on them on the outside stoop.
Really?
And you'd open the door to let him in, and the bunny would come in with him.
Uh-huh.
Mm. And then it would be like an indoor game. So,
yeah, yeah. So, okay.
But my initial question was, since he does hunt these rabbits, I'm curious if there's a danger of rabies, which I keep his shots up to date, but are there any other?
Yeah, no, not to worry. As long as you keep the shots up to date, they're not going to be a problem. What happens is, rabbits and rabies are extremely rare. It's not impossible, but it's extremely rare, so I wouldn't worry about it. But just keeping the cats. And I'd encourage you to think about not allowing the cat to roam. Most places have leash laws, and there's a reason for that, because they really do. Even though you feed them well, they're good predators, and they eat a lot of birds and a lot of bunnies, and you may not care so much about the bunnies. You may care about the birds or something else. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
He's actually more of a he's not a very good climber because he's such a large cat. But
sure.
Unfortunately, Kim, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
And, thank you for your
thank you very much for the call. We won't be able to get to any more calls. Sorry about that. That we're out of time. Jim Pease, Iowa State University. Emeritus Professor, thanks so much. It was a great hour.
My pleasure.
Loved
thanks
hearing about rabbits.
And okay.
We'll talk to you again.
Yeah, I'll be hearing you tomorrow.
Oh, no. Okay. Had to get one more in.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye, Jim. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Our student assistant today was Christoph Mai. I'm Dennis Reese. Thanks for listening.